brought to you by Currency Fair. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. You are very welcome to another episode of the Sideshow Garden Podcast. Sideshow.com, at Sideshow on Twitter, and Facebook.com/TheSideshow. Let's not beat around the bush. I am delighted to say on the phone line today, we have Caitlin McLaughlin. Caitlin, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for wanting to talk to me.
Well, hey, listen, what can I say? You are held in very high esteem, I should have the listeners of the Sideshow know. Caitlin, for those who are not aware of you, what is it that you do for a living, or what is it that puts you on my radar, I guess?
So I'm a garden designer. I work for myself. It's a company called Thrift Landscape. Which only started recently because I won the RHS Young Designer of the Year 2016 award and decided to pursue this as my career.
So hold on, just stop the lights there for a second. You won the 2016 Royal Horticultural Society Young Garden Designer of the Year. Do I have that correct?
Yes, that's correct. So I entered it and won.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
You're most welcome. I'm a bit impressed. I feel quite privileged to be talking to you now.
Well, thanks. It was pretty exciting when I won. I entered it just thinking I've got nothing to lose. And obviously worked very hard, gave it my all. But to win, when the RHS announced it, it was just so overwhelming. It was fantastic.
Well, let's get into the, well, I mean, the first thing that impresses is when somebody says the Royal Horticultural Society. How does it feel to have that stamp of approval? And at what age do you hold that accolade at?
So I'm 26. I was actually the youngest to win this year. My other two competitors were older than me. And that was a pretty big achievement in itself. And having the stamp of approval from the RHS just means everything. It kind of means hopefully I'm going in the right direction and that I've kind of got their encouragement behind me, which is means so much.
Well, I know from previous guests that we've had on the show, Rob Hardy would have spoke very highly about the accolades that the Royal Horticultural Society would have given a former guest of the show. If you want to go back and listen to that one, people of the Sideshow podcast world. But I know Rob had said that just having that stamp of approval on your plants is massive in what it does and how they put it on their literature. At 26 years young, with a new business, you kind of can't ask for a better somebody to hold your foot while you are stepping up that ladder. Is that a fair way to put that?
That's completely right. It's given me a kind of feeling that I'm pursuing the career that I'm meant to pursue and that I'm going about it in the right way. I mean, there's almost no better stamp of approval than the RHS. So their support is brilliant.
Yeah, no. There's no question about it. There is no greater stamp of approval. The finest horticultural society in the world, the finest garden show on the planet, and the finest garden shows and the finest garden designers. Let's go all the way back, if we can, then, Caitlin. Where did all of this start? Did you do the college thing? How did the college thing go?
So I actually didn't do any courses or go to college to do garden design. I went to university in Birmingham to study biology and then a master's in plant genetics and conservation. So you could say I've always had an interest in plants, but just actually from kind of a different point of view. And I was looking at the importance of genetics in terms of conservation, future food security and breeding. But I had this hobby of gardening and designing in the background. So I kind of ended up going into a career in science, but pursuing this in like a parallel route as I went through my career. And I decided to take the next step, I suppose, from hobby to actually doing something about it. And I entered the RHS Malvern Spring Show 2015. And I was lucky enough with my sister to do a small show garden there. We won a silver medal, which was fantastic. And that kind of started me off on the career change towards becoming a garden designer, despite the lack of training.
This is kind of funny, and I don't, for those of you listening, you'll know I have a bit of a sense of humor, a wry wit. It doesn't always work in my favor sometimes, but the more I kind of talk to you, the more I'm kind of scratching my head going, you seem to have or talk like you haven't really, or you're a little bit surprised to kind of be where you are, but you, even in your studying, you seem to have not studied, let's say, horticulture as I did. You seem to have put horticulture into a calculator and pressed the square root button and studied that instead, which is the difference between maths and applied maths. You've a little bit of James Wong about you, if you don't mind me saying.
Well, we did both go to Kew. I ended up working there after university, so that's kind of a massive compliment. I think he's fantastic. I quite like that comparison, because with my plant sciences background, I like to bring that into the designs I've done. And that's what I actually did with Tatton Young Designer, and may have been one of the reasons I stood out. The theme for Tatton from the RHS was health, happiness and horticulture. And obviously, we all know that green spaces can help people both mentally and physically. And I wanted to combine my garden space so that it wasn't just focused on human well-being, but also brought in an aspect of nature conservation. And I wanted to look at specifically UK native wildflowers, why they're important for biodiversity, and create a space that helped both people and nature. So with that in mind, I actually grew 800 of my own wildflowers in a polytunnel I built in my mum's back garden. Because I had nowhere else to put it, and I knew I needed the plants. And I did that for the months leading up to Tatton, and then brought them all to Cheshire to plant in the show garden.
Okay, now the plot starts to tick in ever so slightly. So I gather you've got a very delightful mom who is obviously quite understanding. And when I say that, in the back of my head, I'm also thinking of my own mom, who... God bless her and God rest her, I would have grown literally those plants under my bed, and that's not a joke. And I understand, as a grown man now, it's not very hygienic. But when you turn around to your own parents and say, I'm commandeering enough space in order to be able to put 800 plants, we'll get to the understanding bit in a minute, but did you do that by the necessity of cost, or what was the catalyst for that decision?
I suppose it was a combination of a couple of things. One was cost. I think that's always an element when you're building a show garden. But secondly, I actually found it quite difficult to get plants, wildflowers, that were the right size. I found it quite easy to get plug plants in 9-centimeter pots, but I needed to grow all those on myself because I couldn't really find a way of doing it and including them in the garden so they looked show garden worthy, I suppose. So I did it myself.
Just to explain what Caitlin has just said, there is a huge difference between what is, let's say, what I might plant in a garden, which is absolutely perfect in every single way, and what I might put into a show garden, which, as previously discussed with every single person from Paul Martin, from Andrew Wilson to Sherry Carman, they will all, every single one of them, tell you that show gardening, they're not real gardens. Is that a fair way to put that, Caitlin?
Yeah, it's like the snapshot of the best possible garden at the best possible time of year.
So you did yours with wildflowers, and that's the other thing. So from all of the nurseries that we would have had on, it's probably quite difficult, number one, to find any nursery that sells wildflowers, because they are usually wild for very good reason in that they grow wild, but at the same token, they're not a couture style plant, if you'll allow me use that word.
Yeah, I completely agree. Some of them did look a little bit raggedy, I suppose, a little bit wild, but I actually incorporated that into the garden itself, and I wanted them to look as natural as possible. I didn't want them to look too manicured, so they could kind of represent the biodiversity that's out there and the plants going through their life cycle. So if a plant went slightly over, or if there was a seed head left on, it showed the life cycle at that time of year and was a slightly more realistic snapshot of what's out there. At least that's what I tried to portray.
But that's a dangerous game for a young girl. I say a young girl, I don't mean that to be disingenuous in any way, but for a guy who built a garden at a garden show in its first year ever to happen in Dublin. I say in Dublin, in the Phoenix Park, the creme de la creme at the highest, which was Bloom in the Park. I know for a fact when there are 100,000 people coming through the gates of any show garden and they're paying in the door and they are entitled to turn around and say to you, look, I think that garden is absolutely brilliant. I think that's genius. But there is always a percent, and rightly so, who will turn around and say, I don't know how that got gold. And in your case, to have an imperfect plant, you therefore would have had to rewrite your brief, or write your brief very, very eloquently, so that the judges were aware, although the public may not entirely be, but so the judges were well aware of what you were actually, if you'll allow me use the term, playing at.
Yeah, my brief clearly stated that that's how I wanted the garden to look, and that I wasn't representing nature in a false light. I wanted it to represent what's out there in the UK at that time of year. And I said I wouldn't force anything, and I also wouldn't stop anything from going over. I just wanted it to look as it would in nature. And so that was my brief.
But surely to God, and you know, you listen back to the interview again that we've done with Paul Martin, and I reference Paul's interview over and over again because he explains very, very eloquently where he came from, how it all started, what a show garden should be, how you do it. If students were listening, and not that you are, you're older than that, or you're older in the game than that, but if students were listening, I would always say to them, look, go listen to Paul. If you want to know how to do it right, that's how you do it. And believe me, as showmen go, Paul does it extremely, extremely well. Pause. All of his photographs of all of his show gardens that he has ever done in his entire career, there is not a hair out of place on any of them, but you allowed that in. Would it not, that in mind, have been easier or better for you, let's say long-term wise, to have, you know, the perfect photograph in every single way, and people would look at that and go, my God, she's a genius, as versus not knowing the brief, which most of the public would not, and then being able to maybe query it or say, I prefer that over that one. Does that kind of make sense to you?
Yeah, and it was risky, the take I took on the show garden, but I wanted to combine these wildflowers with show garden quality ornamentals, I suppose you call them. And I combined the two and kind of blurred the planting boundaries within my garden so that it wasn't just wildflowers. It also did represent what would be a show garden and what the public would expect. And I was quite fortunate in that I was at the show garden ready to talk to the public and explain to anyone that had any questions what my thoughts were, what my brief was, so they would understand. But so many of them came up to me and said, this is perfect, this is what we like, and this is how we'd like to see more show gardens, which I thought was really interesting. As a fan of show gardens, you know, Chelsea, Hampton Court, et al., I think they're brilliant in their diversity, and it was really nice that the public kind of included my garden within that diversity for it being not perfect, not 100% show garden quality, but still had the element that made it a show garden.
Well, and here's the thing, and for those of you listening at home to this, don't get me wrong, and believe me, I've been the ups and I've been the very highs and the very, very lows. And when I ask these questions to Caitlin, it's in part out of admiration, because year one to go in and play any kind of what I might consider, or anyone in show garden land would consider, a dangerous game, it's brilliant when you pull it off. And it's one of them that you kind of might turn around and go, I should have done X, when it's a little bit too late. And at 26 years of age, you do kind of start as you mean to go on, but more so, let me go back to the 4 meter by 4 meter size plot that you had, where every single leaf is visible, where in a large plot show garden, let's say on Main Avenue, Chelsea, you don't necessarily get to see right into the back, and you do not get to walk through the space and to intrinsically, how would you say, examine it, so to speak. What was the stage after with this garden?
After I'd completed it, it was always in the plans to donate the garden to a hospice, because although I created it as a show garden for July at Tatton Park, I wanted it to have the longevity to be donated for people to use, hopefully for a long time to come. And so I wanted to ensure that it still worked as a functional garden. And we rebuilt the garden at the hospice in September and opened it to the public, and the feedback's been really lovely. I'm just so happy I could do that.
That, if you don't mind me saying, did you, just to clarify this one, did you have a sponsor on this garden?
So the main sponsor was actually the RHS. That was one of the brilliant things about the category. The RHS would give you your main sponsorship money to cover the garden. I did go over budget. I suppose that happens. But luckily, I could cover that, and I got sponsorship in kind from several companies that were really amazing and like really were keen to help and support young designers.
Well, let's go a slightly different direction. But since you went and won the Royal Horticultural Society Young Garden Designer of the Year, built at Tatton, won silver at Tatton.
Silver at Malvern, gold at Tatton, sorry.
Sorry, just what?
I won silver for my Malvern garden, but Tatton, when I won Young Designer, I got gold.
Right. That's the equivalent of Debbie Harry knocking on your door at a Halloween and saying, by the way, I've brought Ron Wood with me. Is that okay? And you're just kind of going, like, this is Christmas time. Which garden are we talking about now? Which garden was donated?
The Tatton Young Designer of the Year garden that won gold.
Right, okay. So was that the 4 metre by 4 metre one?
No, so it's 9 metres by 9 metres.
Right, so, okay. Yeah.
We got a little bit tangled, sorry.
We've got quite tangled. You're now more talented than I was actually aware of. You're most welcome. What was the 9 metre by 9 metre garden?
So that was the Tatton Young Designer of the Year show garden, the one I grew the wildflowers for. That was done this July, supported by the RHS, mentored by Paul Harvey Brooks, and that won gold and Young Designer of the Year. The smaller garden was the year before at Malvern Festival.
Okay, and that was the festival garden?
Yes. So that one was my first ever like foray into garden design, and that won a silver.
Okay, all right. So this is, yeah, okay. So now you are extremely talented. Okay, so now we've got that all clarified up in Peter's head. I'll still stick with my James Wong analogy, and we are now entirely aware of how just amazing you are. What's happened since you finished at basically scooping every single award that is possible to any 26-year-old young lady in the UK. What's happened since then?
So I've come back to normality slightly. I've come back to working on domestic projects with my company, Thrift Landscape. But that's myself and my sister, and we work together to design gardens. She does more of the project management and I do the plants and design aspects. And we've been working on a number of projects. I mean, there's a really big one in Cheshire that we're doing, which includes an orchard and creating garden rooms and a wildflower meadow. So that's fantastic. And then I'm also working with the RHS on an urban gardening show that's happening in November with Cityscape. So that will be really cool. That's all about urban gardening. And I'm really lucky to be involved in that.
It's kind of a nice compliment if you don't, well, again, and we've touched on it before, having that ORHS stamp of approval basically on your name, as Rob Hardy would have discussed in his interview with me, you know, even having that you won that medal awarded by the ORHS, be it at Chelsea or be it at Tottenham or Hampton, it's kind of a nice stamp of approval, even greater so, when the ORHS say, hey, listen, would you come and do this with us? Is that a fair way to put that?
Yeah, basically. It felt fantastic, obviously, and I was really flattered. So I was approached by Adolfo Harrison of Cityscape and the ORHS to kind of help out and help organise and build the show. And then obviously get to hang out afterwards and see how the crowd enjoy it, and that would be great as well to get some feedback.
It will indeed. How is Trift Landscaping doing? And curiosity killed the cat, how long, just to clarify, are you in business now?
So we've been in business properly for a couple of months, so it's really early days, but it's actually going really well. I have a lot of projects on, and I'm still kind of getting my head around admin, taxes, and all the fun things that you forget about because you're so focused on wanting to do garden design and plants. And so my sister does quite a lot of the admin tasks that I don't fancy doing, but it's going really well.
But that's hugely important. I'm the other side of it. I'm a guy who works on his own and then brings in the people, I guess, to do that kind of stuff for me. And it you know, and I do tell them, look, even though I'm essentially giving you money, you do need to turn around and say to me, Peter, you need to do X by X, or you need to make sure, well, let's be honest about it, you need to make sure that you get paid by this date. And, you know, and it's there's an element of that about it, but it's almost like I've employed somebody to be my boss, if that makes any sense to you. Do you have that relationship with your sister, or is it, get lost, you. Do you know who you're talking to? I've got gold medals and shiny things. Do you pull rank?
No, definitely not. It's quite an equal partnership because we both have strengths in different aspects. So we really quite balance each other out. And we're lucky that we're both quite organised. So I have timetables, I've got different folders and colour-coded notes. So we're quite on top of things, thank goodness.
Mother of goodness, if only I had a woman like you living in Dublin, Caitlin. I tell you something, I'd be a very rich man. Do you know that? there's very few of you about, that's for sure. What's the next stages on a serious note for Trift Landscapes and Caitlin McLaughlin?
So we're going to continue with the projects we've got going on at the moment. So we're doing some local projects. I've got a project down in London, a big one up in Cheshire, and then a couple more up near Manchester. So that's really keeping me going. I'm hoping to do more show gardens in the future because I think I've caught the bug. And really, if I could develop the business into working on large and small gardens and doing both private and public spaces. I am really quite impressed with Nigel Dunnett and the way his career has worked, and that he does do public planning as well. And I've seen what he's done with, you know, Sheffield City Centre and places like that. And I think it's fantastic, and I'd really like to maybe do that as well.
But to your credit, and I know we've name dropped a little bit, and I say we as in, you know, I would always mention a couple of former guests of the show or, you know, that kind of an element of it. And you rightly so have mentioned, let's say, you know, the good man done it. And again, James Wong and one or two others. And that's absolutely fine. But I mean, whilst you might admire these people, it seems to me, no disrespect to them in any way, that you tend to have your own kind of take on things, Caitlin. And, you know, at the start of this chat, this conversation, I was kind of thinking to myself, maybe you were a little bit, you know, a little bit on the shy side or not able to big yourself up enough. And now I'm kind of thinking to myself, you're a pretty strong-willed woman who kind of, for all of the right reasons, things seem to happen because you work extremely hard for them. And also, the RHS don't hand out gold medals because you were overly inspired by somebody else's designs.
Yeah, I would agree that I am shy, but I also would agree that I work very, very hard and I'm quite ambitious. So I, for example, with the Young Designer Show Garden, I put my everything into that. And I went into it thinking that no detail is too small and nothing should be overlooked. And that's kind of how I view doing garden design in general, really.
And I guess that's what people get when they employ Thrift Landscaping. They do get your all. And that's not to big you up. That's probably a fair enough point, I think, at this stage of the conversation.
Yeah, I'd like to think I do give each client everything. And that because of that, they get a garden that they're really happy with. I'm obviously happy with it, and that really represents what they wanted, and I'm just really passionate about what I do.
What can I say, Caitlin McLaughlin, it has been an absolute pleasure to talk to you again. In brackets, there's an in-joke there. The websites, for those of you who are not aware at this stage of the game, is thriftlandscapes.co.uk. They're available on the Twitter, the Facebook, the Instagram, etc. All I can say is watch this space. To you and your family and everyone behind the scenes, Caitlin, congratulations on all the success, and I look forward to having you back on. It's really quite inspiring to see the energy that is starting to come true when 2, 3, 4 years ago we were, well, it was looking for the next generation of horts to stand up and make a stand, and you seem to be one of the greater ones in that department. Caitlin McLaughlin, thank you so much and congratulations again.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
And that is it for another episode of the Sideshow Garden Podcast. You know, it's a funny one, but when I was growing up in the trade, and okay, yeah, it's been 14 years since I've been 26 years of age, but mother of God, I mean, I won't say that the opportunities didn't exist, because that'll sound like I want to pull out a violin bow and say, well, I didn't get X, Y, or Z, and that's far from the case. But more to the point, when I was growing up in the industry, when I went out on my own at 24, 25, you know, there was that whole cliche of, is this your dad's business? A conversation I had with Matthew Potash, head of RHS Wisley at just 30 years of age, just about, says you. You know, you look at Sherry Carman, who we had on the show this year. Is she even 30? She would have done the immersed garden. And what a garden it was. You take Pip Probert, who's just gone 30, and you're kind of going, like, the energy, the buzz for the first time ever, probably, in this industry, in this beautiful industry in which we work, where we all understand that you're never going to be the richest man in the world. Okay, yeah, fair enough. You might be a little bit rich now, but my God almighty, at a 20-year point in time where you were busking on Grafton Street, or you, okay, maybe not busking on Grafton Street, but in the music analogy you were, you know, there were tough times and you worked hard, and there is an element of the vocation, and there's a reason why not everybody gets into it. And it's not for money that you should, is what I would say. Yeah, okay, yeah. You've got an electricity bill. But isn't it amazing when you hear a story like Caitlin's? And hand on heart, I genuinely look forward to seeing the next chapter on the Thrift Landscape story. But also now I'm starting to scroll backwards through the entire Sideshow back catalogue on iTunes, and I'm starting to kind of go, Matthew Potash, Sherry Carman, Pip Probert, Caitlin McLaughlin, Jamie Butterworth. You're starting to see them all kind of trickle in, and you're kind of going, wow, isn't that wonderful? Isn't that nice? Isn't that what the industry wanted? And now you've got this big ball of energy, and it's flying through at a rate of knots, and it is awe-inspiring. And hats off, I should add, to Tim Howell, a good friend of the Sideshow, for nodding me in the right direction on Caitlin and making sure that this happened a little bit before time, a little bit ahead of time, not too soon, says you. But also I have to give credit to the RHS. I mean, when you go through the back catalogue of all those names I've mentioned, they are thanked in there pretty profusely, and rightly so. Ladies and gentlemen, have a great weekend and the great outdoors. That's it. We're all but out of time. Thank you so much for listening. At Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/TheSideshow, and Sideshow.com for anything else you need. If you're in iTunes, like the young hip kids are, the 30 under 30. Catherine from Horda's Loci says you give it a rate and review on iTunes. We'll chat to you next Friday. Slán, Gormil Maga, take care. Bye-bye. Oh, and in case I forget, thanks for listening. It really does mean a lot. See you at the Christmas party. Bye.